First off, I'd like Mike Carroll to speak. Mike, you have advocated self-management for your properties as long as I've been aware of you here at Real Source. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how many units you own, and what led you to this course.
I started out in Denver, Colorado, so I'm from Denver. I've been in real estate over 20 years now. I sold real estate as a career, both residential and commercial real estate. I've owned apartments for many years. I'm not sure how many years. We've just always traded them up. And along the way, we found out that the only people who ever took care of the property and ran the properties the way we wanted them run was ourselves. Ran into Real Source when I lived in Denver, Colorado. Joined Real Source there. Was able to move to California at the end of 2004. Bought in San Luis Obispo in the year 2000, moved here in 2000, basically live here now full-time, 2005. We now own approximately 450 to 500 units. We just bought a retail space, which is very different and very new, since we couldn't find any more apartments. All of our apartments are located in the Charlotte region of North Carolina. The retail space is also in that region. We go back and visit the space pretty much once a month. I don't have to go back there once a month, but I think it's one, it's good to go back and you show your face and it shows that you are interested in. Two, I play golf when I go back. I played golf with my auditor a couple weeks ago when I was. I do play golf and things like that, so it's not a total. I'm able to write it off. We will be going to see my wife's brother in Florida in December. We'll stop through Charlotte on the way and write the trip off as a business expense. So there are some advantages to going out there. And this will be the first time we've gone out in December, I believe, you know, since we've bought the property. Just to give you kind of an idea of, I will probably talk a little bit more on the concept. If you had smaller properties and a group of you in a particular city wanted to form a co-op, I believe I've mentioned that before.
Yes.
What I think that you would need to do and what I would think that you would need to look at to make something like that function. Normally, I've talked about the fact that you need, I feel, a minimum of 50 units to make self-management functionally, you know, self-sustaining and be able to affordable. So I'm not sure in a co-op type situation what the number would be. I think that could be less. It could be more. I don't know. I don't have any experience in that. But what I will say is just if you do decide that you want to do that, I'm going to try and give you an overall view of some of the items I think you need to cover before you actually, you know, get started. Because the first thing you don't want to do is decide that you want to do it and then go out and fire your property manager.
Yes.
Because you need to, first of all, I'll go over some things that you need to do, but not necessarily in any particular order that they would have to be done. You would need to set up your own property management company, and it would be in the form of an LLC or a similar organization. All the help that you would hire would be hired by that LLC and employed by that LLC as employees. I've known people who think that they would like to do it as independent contractors. If the IRS audits you, you will lose. So maintenance. If you get up into enough units, you can hire a full-time maintenance person. Otherwise, if you don't have enough units, I have seen in many locales where you can hire a company that will come in and do an apartment turn, and they will. You can order, sit down and negotiate with them and be able to itemize what you want and what you expect, and they will give you a price per item based on the square footage of the units, like how much they'll charge to paint a one bedroom that's, you know, 600 feet, or how much they would charge to paint a two bedroom that was 900 feet. So you can get a set price on that, and they will do turns for you. That would help with some of the smaller, if you tried to do it and you didn't have enough units to really go out and hire a full-time maintenance person. That would work, and that way you could hire a handyman to come in and do handyman repairs on your unit as needed. The other thing you will need to do is you will need to get workman's comp insurance. Just the way it works. I've had, last year I had somebody get hurt. They have workman's comp insurance. I have workman's comp insurance. It's a difficult, actually not a problem for me, and it's actually the biggest problem I have is my insurance rates have gone up because of it. I filed a claim, but that's life. That's why you have it. It's a lot cheaper than trying to take care of it yourself.
Right. Mike, can I step in here just a minute and ask everyone, if your phone's on speakerphone, would you press the mute button or disconnect the microphone part of your telephone so that we don't get a lot of background noises here?
Okay, I'm going to try that. If I lose you, I will call back.
Okay.
Okay, I'll just continue on. Things you are going to need are bank accounts that need to be set up with a local bank to make payments. I would say on the order of 95% of all my bill paying is paid online. With some vendors, I have it set up that it's an automatic payment or a contractual arrangement. I hired U.S. Lawns in the Charlotte area of North Carolina to do the lawn care. They have, we've negotiated out a 12-month, thing for mowing, seeding, aerating, and everything else. I get a monthly bill. I have the online bank make that payment for me. They send me a notice that it's been paid, and I can follow it on the transaction. So you can set up a lot of these payments online. I pay just a very small amount of bills with an actual check now. But that would have to be set up. With online banking, with bank accounts, you will need to, because I believe your property management company, you will need to set up escrow accounts, or one escrow account that will cover the security deposits. You'll have to check. Each state has different laws regarding how a property management company manages those security deposits, but most of the states in the country that I'm aware of will require you to have a separate account for those escrow deposits. So you'll need to have that set up. Also, you need to be a property manager and pay yourself. That way, somebody in your group, if you have a group, somebody has to be the actual property manager. You could have it on a rotating basis. I would recommend that who's ever doing it does it for at least 6 months to a year and then rotate out of the job if you don't want to do it. Or if somebody says, well, that I have a few extra hours a week and I can do it, you pay. Everybody pays them. And I charge myself and all the rest of my partners 5% management fee for managing the property. So I've got a couple other things I'm going to cover about that in a few seconds, but the next thing you need to set up is your vendors, and you need to get them set up money right now. I mean, you've got to get that set up. This is all things you have to have set up before you can really, you know, go into business for yourself. You need some sort of an office. Now, it doesn't have to be an outside space. It could be somebody who has a unit available which has been a manager's office in maybe a little bit larger. You have somebody who has a 16 unit and they had an on-site manager. Everybody, you know, could use that, and then they would chip in and pay for that loss of rent for that unit, and you could do it that way, or you could do it rent cheap office space in a central location. You can probably rent it for a few $100 a month if you aren't looking for anything glamorous. Things happen in that office space is you've got to have computers with high-speed internet. You have to have some good management software for those computers on managing your properties. You need phones, obviously. You'll need some simple, I got used office equipment and, you know, supplies, file cabinets and stuff like that. I bought all of mine used. I never buy mine new. Certain vendors, you need to get something like First Advantage. They do all my, you probably, I don't know if there's others out there, but they screen all the tenants for both credit checks and criminal background checks. I also have them screen the employees. I do not hire employees with any kind of criminal background. And also, if some employee were to do something on the property and you hadn't checked, you could have some tremendous liability. So I just screen all the employees. I have gotten to the point where I will not screen, I will not hire anybody with a DUI either. That is, that usually is a signal of other problems, either domestically or just plain drinking problems. So I do not hire anybody with a DUI. I personally use ADP. You can do it any way you want to. ADP handles all my payroll. ADP also has a feature where your employee, if you have just one leasing agent, when they come in the morning and they clock on, when they clock on to their computer, ADP can use that at like a time clock and keep track of their hours for you. Now, there's some disadvantages to that in the obvious sense that these people need to be out showing apartments so that they won't necessarily be coming and going strictly to and from the office, but they do have that. I offer health insurance. And I actually don't pay for all of it because I don't think I can afford to. I don't know whether I actually could afford to or not, but I will pay $3 a month to any of my full-time employees. It's a benefit to keep some of my better employees. You will probably, these are just different vendors you need to set up. You probably want to look at an accounting firm. When you have that type of situation, if you have a bunch of people, you're probably going to want the books looked at least once a year by some independent source, so that especially if you're the one doing the property management, so that it's more for your protection than it is to keep them happy. It's so that the auditor, if you have the books looked at once a year, you can say, I didn't touch any money. It's all here. He counts for all of it. But on with the next thing. You'll need, if you live in a climate that requires snow removal, you'll need that. Carpet cleaning, pest control, lawn, I've mentioned that. You'll need new carpet and vinyl vendors, trash, paint company, painting company, a cleaning company. I use a Home Depot and Lowell's. I use them because they'll deliver. We can order it over the phone and they will deliver it within 2 days. You need certain, you know, utilities. You'll need the electric, the cable, the phone. Vendors I use but don't keep on a regular basis because I do almost everything with either handymen or my own maintenance staff. If you're going to re-roof a whole property, you're going to need a roofer, electrician, plumber, and obviously an attorney. Other things to think about if you're doing this as a group and you have a bunch of people with duplexes. It costs more to manage duplexes on a unit per unit basis than it does to manage the 16 unit. Also, it would cost more to manage a large remodel, or if somebody had bought a real fix-up property and needed to do a lot of fix-up, you would need to pay more for the management of that. So you have to sit down and be flexible. You can't break these things up and say, well, we'll just divide up all the costs on a per unit basis, because some things are going to be more expensive than others. And whoever the property manager is that you decide to go with, you get a half a dozen people together and you have a property manager. You have to have enough confidence in them to let them make 90% of the decisions, or it won't work. If you want to micromanage it, this is probably not going to work for you. I think you need to hire the flips out on all the smaller things until you can get up to at least, I would say, 75, maybe 100, if you can get a group of people together with 75 or 100. I have one complex with 200 units, and we have two full-time maintenance people. We have two full-time office people, and that is just a real nice number. And I realize that's not realistic for people, but I'm just trying to give you an idea that at certain numbers, hiring people full-time becomes real easy and it pays for all itself. So, also, I think that when you get together as a group, you have to set some minimum standards for how you're going to do the turns. Like, if you hire a company to do it, you'll have it all standardized. If you're going to hire a maintenance person who's going to be jumping around, you cannot have somebody trying to remember, well, Joe just wants them painted and he doesn't want the carpet done, he just wants it cleaned and, you know, go on to the next one. He doesn't care if the carpet's worn. Sue over here, though, wants the carpet. You've got to have some carpet change or you'll go crazy. The people there will go absolutely crazy. So you need to have minimum standards for repairs and your turns on what is everybody will agree is acceptable standard of practice, so that you have to talk the first few months. I would suggest talking quite a bit as a group to try and make sure you get things worked out and deal with problems that will be unique that come up. I would be happy to answer, you know, if somebody does put together a group, I would be happy to talk to anybody or work with anybody on it, because I know I'm leaving a lot of stuff out. I'm hoping Linda will go over how to deal with a little bit larger groups, or maybe she's going to talk about the same thing I have talked about, because I think it's a little easier in general when you have a little bit larger properties for management. I believe, now this is just my philosophy, I'm going to give you some of my philosophy. My philosophy is your costs and your expenditures come from turns. The major costs in owning apartments are turning the units.
Right.
Are, in my opinion, much more controllable than a lot of people think that they are. When we turn an apartment, our apartments always have somebody go through there after they supposedly are completely turned and completely done, and check to make sure everything works in the apartment. Checks all the light switches, checks, you know, the disposal, if you have a disposal, checks the stove, and make sure, because one of the ways to make a tenant just absolutely furious is to have them move into a brand new place and find stuff that doesn't work, or the bathroom sink doesn't drain, or something like that. And that's not the way you want to get off on a good foot with your tenant. Also, when a tenant calls in and says that something is wrong, we will get back to them that day, and we will get it fixed that day. And if we can't get it fixed that day, we will explain to them why we could not get it fixed that day, and when it will be fixed that day, if we have to hire somebody special to come out, we tell them, we explain that to them, we tell them when that appointment was set up, and explain to them that that was the first appointment that they could give us to do this work. Tenants want to be kept in the loop as to when something will be fixed. Tenants want stuff fixed. You know, they want it, they would prefer it never broke, and when if they are calling to complain, they want it fixed now. I also send out questionnaires, little cards that go in the package that, you know, when a tenant moves out, that asks them why they moved. And it doesn't go back to the office. It comes to me. Because I want to know why they're moving. Because I only want tenants who are moving because, one, they got married, their job changed and they're moving across country, or they bought a house. So I want some, because I want my tenants to stay there, and I do not want the turnover. I don't give away the place, though. I charge market rent, and I keep track of what market rent is on a regular basis every few months by doing market surveys to see if we need to raise the rent. But at the same time, people will pay for service. They will pay to have a nice place to live. They will pay to have a quiet place to live, a clean place to live. In the 200-unit apartment complex, instead of having maintenance people do this, I have two retired ladies, at one at each end of the complex, and they get half off their rent, and they go out every morning, and by 9 o'clock, they have picked up all the trash in the complex. And I mean cigarette butts, everything. They have picked it all up. And they pick up the trash, and if the place looks good, we don't allow, you know, junk cars, we don't allow cars that don't operate or anything else. So when people come, you know, it's not the best place in the world, but I try to run a place where if that's all you could afford, that would be the place you would pick out, and you would stay there because you were satisfied with it, not because it was the cheapest place. Mike,
Wow, that's a lot of good stuff, and I've got a few questions. I'd like to, I'm sure we have other questions. I'd like to turn the time over to Linda right now and hear her experience and her advice, and then we'll take whatever time we have at the end to take some questions from the group. So, Linda, would you introduce yourself to everyone here and tell us how and why you started managing your own and what you do and how many you got.
Benevic, and I'm from San Diego, and the reason I started management myself was because I got ripped off, and I came up the hard way through the School of Hard Knocks and learned some very valuable lessons. I wholeheartedly agree 100% with Mike on the co-op idea. I think that's brilliant for those real source investors who have bought smaller units. I think by banding together and listening to Mike's advice, there's some very valuable information there that he's imparted, and I think that there should be a way that maybe real source can put some of these smaller property owners together so they can do this on an economy of scale. For myself, I got started back in 1985 when I bought some single-family two-on-one properties in California, held them for quite some time, sold them at the height of the market. Well, not the height of the market. I sold them about 5 or 6 years ago and bought in mostly in Oklahoma City, some in South Carolina, in Greenville, South Carolina. I have some property in Asheville, North Carolina. And what had happened was when I bought the property in Oklahoma City, I hired a professional management company. I wasn't planning on being there very much. Well, after about a year, the numbers didn't start to add up. There was a lot missing. There was charges that shouldn't have been there. And I fired them. And I decided that I was going to take over management myself. One thing I did do when I fired them is the people that I thought who they've had as an on-site management, the first thing I did was get their home telephone numbers. So when I fired the property management company, I knew who was a good property manager, on-site manager, and who wasn't. And through those people, I was able to get a lot of experienced people who had a good handle on vendors and where to buy materials and how to really run a property. You have to keep it clean. You have to treat your people who work for you. These people are running your property, okay? You're not there. They are. You have to treat them well. You have to pay them a decent wage, just what the going rate is in the area. I give out bonuses for with 100% occupancy. I give them their birthdays off. I give them birthday money. I give them Christmas bonuses. And these people report to me and me directly. I probably spend anywhere between 5 and 10 hours a month on the phone. And the property managers that I have, when they report to me and tell me what's going on, I actually feel as if I am there because they're so descriptive. I try to also visit my property at least once a month. And sometimes that's not always possible. It has gone as long as 3 months. But basically, it's getting, I firmly believe in you have to get the good property managers. If you, I'm going to stray a little bit from the co-op presentation that Mike did. When you're buying apartment buildings, you need the economy of scale. So you have to, I physically went there and interviewed people. If you have to get on a plane and go to the city that you bought your property in, put an ad in the paper and do interviews to find somebody that you think has the knowledge and the experience and that you're compatible with, you can get a deal for it. I wouldn't just go hire somebody over the telephone. You have to physically be there. You have to meet them. They have to know who you are, and they have to know that you're very, very interested in your property and that you're going to be keeping tabs on it. The way I handle the banking is I have internet access to my bank account. I know exactly how many tenants I have. I know how many vacancies I have. I know I can look at my bank account every day, and I authorize any check that needs to be written off that bank account. I have an escrow account that I put money in for taxes and insurance that comes due several times a year. I have a separate a bank account for my security deposits. It's important the way you hold your property. I highly recommend, it's mandatory that you hold it in LLC and pretty much do everything under the umbrella of the LLC. It protects you, it helps you with your taxes. It protects you from a lot of liability. What else can I say? On your employees, I bond my employees. If they're not bondable, they're not hireable. I agree with Mike that I also do background checks. I won't hire anybody with a DUI or has any kind of a criminal background. For my payroll, I also use ADP. It's very simple, convenient. They just take the money out of my checking account and they pay the taxes. And I don't have to refile all the forms. I don't have to worry about any of that. And as far as tenants and stuff, with the tenants, you do need to provide them with clean, livable units. And if something does go wrong, one thing I insist upon is the tenants are kept well informed. I do the same thing as Mike does. If they file a work order, that work order is performed that day, or that tenant knows why it won't be done till the following day. If you keep your tenants informed, they feel important. And if they feel important, they're going to stay. And I have a lot of long-term tenants. Yeah, and you're going to get skips in the middle of the night. It happens on occasion. But you can also have a waiting list of people. I put an ad in the paper every week there's an ad in the paper for my apartments, and so I have a waiting list of people. If somebody leaves, I can fill that unit pretty much immediately. So I guess that's about all I have. If you want to open this to questions.
Okay, well, thank you, Linda, and thank you, Mike. Let's, my thoughts, what do you do to ensure that you're in compliance with the fair housing laws with your resident managers? How trained, what kind of training do you give them?
My managers go to the city, and the apartment association runs monthly classes, and with all the updated laws and whatnot, so I pay for them to go to those classes.
I belong to the Greater Charlotte Apartment Association, and everybody, maintenance workers, everybody that works for me goes at least once a year to a fair housing class.
Okay.
Hello, good question. I really like the idea that the co-op idea for like small investors, at least the guys with small units. My question is, you know, assuming like four of us, you know, decided to do this, you know, is this something that could be done, assuming you start off with like an 80% occupancy and around 50%, 50 units? Because it sounds like it's something that's very costly. Start off.
Mike, I'll let you field that question.
Okay, I'll start with that question. Starting any kind of business, you're going to have some startup costs. I think that's just the nature of the game. If you decide that you don't want to do that, that's fine, but I would say if you can get four people and get 50 units, that would be a really nice, or more, that would be nice. My concern with a co-op has been that you would have way too many people in there, and if you could get four with 50, my concern has always been something like 30 owners and 60 properties, or 60 units, would be extremely hard to handle. If you could have maybe 10 or 15 owners and have 150, yes, you're going to have startup costs, but you're going to you're running a business. This business needs to have computers, it needs to have equipment and everything else. It's going to cost money to do a startup.
And
it will cost money the first, it will cost money that first month, because the company is not going to give you refund any of the money immediately when you do that switchover. You're going to have to basically carry it for the first month.
Right. With all these things that you have in place, you know, within the first quarter, are you able to cash flow? I mean, are you in the positive, you know, within the first quarter to 6 months?
I cash flowed from day one. Not much, though. My goal the first year was to not lose money.
Yes.
I buy properties which have are newer, in good condition, basically. They may have some deferred maintenance that were in, poorly run, mismanaged. So I have all kinds of problems, but I usually do not, well, I have, a lot of times I'll have huge vacancy problems. That is fairly typical with a mismanaged property when we, and very under rented, rents that were just tremendously, under rented, but I try not to put down more than 30% on a property, and the bank, you know, wants it to be able to cash flow with 30% down. And if it can't cash flow with 30% down, it doesn't mean it's going to make money or anything like that, but it's got to be able to break even. You should be able to start a business
set aside for reserves when you, like, assuming we had 100 units, Mike, 80% occupation, C-grade property, let's say. How much reserve, how much you set aside for reserve to pull this off?
Okay, my 200 unit, I have basically two vacant right now. And on reserve, I'd like to put aside $10,000 a month, but I usually have a tendency to spend it on different things that need to be taken care of, because when you buy it, a pretty good inspection. My inspection reports usually run $3,000 to $5,000 when I buy a property, and I go through every unit, not a sampling of units. I usually personally walk every unit. Did that answer that?
Well, I was thinking along the lines of right now we're kind of we're more or less stuck with the property management that we have. We're thinking along the lines of the next market that we exchange over into. So I think we may have to go along the lines of setting up a co-op, because I've looked at the history of this issue. And it seems to be a problem that presents itself in every market going back years. So I'm wondering, percentage-wise, how much money I would need to set aside, when I transition over. Not necessarily, because $10,000 doesn't say much to me as far as on a percentage basis, Like if you're
purchasing, can I ask you how many units you have?
Well,
how many units are we talking about here?
Well, we have 28 units.
28?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, when we transition over to a different market,
I'm asking for a year. A lot of it would depend on, like, when you buy a property, you want to look at the big ticket items. You want to have a reserve for your big ticket items. You can figure, $150 per unit per year. I think that's a rule of thumb. But if you're buying a property that has an older roof, or the roof is going to need replacing within the next 4 or 5 years, you tuck away a little bit more. It's going to depend on the age of your appliances. There's a lot of factors that come into play here. The age of the property, the age of the appliances, how old the roof is, you're going to have to reseal the parking lot, does it have a pool, do you have to, how old is the pool, what kind of work is it going to require, is the pool equipment in good condition? There's a lot of factors that come into play here, and you need to set aside some money for those types of emergencies.
That would be something that you would really pay attention to during the due diligence phase of acquisition, to get what kind of reserve numbers you'd need. I think we have discussed
different priorities, but for me it's the things like roof leaks, pool equipment, things of that nature, and appliances can get pretty costly. If you're buying an older building, your appliances are going to need to replace them. And, refrigerators, depending on the type of property you have, if it's a real new and modern building that you're buying, you're going to buy a better quality refrigerator. If you're buying something that's pre-1980s, you're not going to buy a $400 refrigerator.
Right. I guess, let me take it back to what the original, you guys had originally started talking about. Let's say, right now we're in Huntsville, Alabama with our 28 units. We'll probably, hopefully if things continue to go the way they are, we'll transition over to a different market. And so we're small, we don't we're not in the 200 unit category, but we think, like, I'm thinking that the co-op is, like, really the best way to go.
I think that's a brilliant idea. I think Mike came up with that idea. I think it's brilliant. And I know there's a lot of you who bought in Huntsville. And if you have 28 units, that's pretty much half of, you only need another 25 units to make it cost effective.
Well, and that's exactly my question. I was wondering, like, if there's going to be anything left over, because right now we're bleeding, you know. Yeah, you know. I mean, but to me, it sounds like, you know, like a maintenance person, on-site manager, maintenance person. You have to have, like, health insurance. You have to have all these things. That sounds like, you know, ka-ching, 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 that we might be, if we went that route, you know, what's, you know, the minimum that we would need to make this fly such that we wouldn't be, you know,
okay, well, I not provide health insurance. What I do is...
real quickly, please.
Hello? Go ahead, Mike.
I would just want to say that the 28 units is a really good start, and I agree with you that it is not enough. 50 would be enough to maybe hire, in my opinion, one leasing agent, no maintenance man, no other staff, no nothing, and you would be having to, you know, have that leasing agent hire somebody who would just do all the turns, or hire, on a job basis, a handyman to take care of repairs or something like that. So where what you need to do is, if there's a lot of people, you're in Huntsville, and there's already a lot of people in there. If you could put together 150, then that sounds like a lot. But if you've already got 30, and you put together 5 people with 30 units, basically, you're there.
We have, oddly enough, this is Mike Waters again, and all you Huntsville owners know that I've been talking to you the last couple of weeks about Arlington Management wanting to take a look at it. We have 7 owners that have expressed a willingness to come aboard, and that's 200 units right on the nose. So we've got enough units in Huntsville that if this is something that we want to pursue, we have the critical mass necessary to make it happen.
At 200 units, you can hire what you really need. And what I mean by what you really need is you have 2 office people. One basically does a lot of the paperwork, is there to answer the phones and everything. The other one is out showing properties most of the time, doing, you know, helping with the lease work when they're in there. And you can keep 2 full-time maintenance people busy, by the way, with 200 units. And you'll have enough income, or you should have enough income to pay for that without it being a burden on anybody. You'll be able to get some sort of real space somewhere along the lines, and that is a really nice number. If you can put 200 people, 200 units together as a co-op, I think you have what it...
Mike Waters.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, Mike Carroll. Is that the same model as we have in place, like basically another property management, or is it along the lines of a co-op?
No, it was from the San Diego conference that we held last month. Arlington Properties manages a number of equity services, TIC syndications, and I believe it was Jason Bernas that asked the representative from Arlington, you know, if since they're located in Birmingham, if they'd be interested in Huntsville. And they don't do scattered site management, you know, they prefer the larger units, and so the president of Arlington, Jim Reffield, said, well, you know, if we can get enough units in one area, you know, we'd take a look at it. And so that was the impetus that, and the reason that I was polling. But, you know, we're not locked into any solution. I'm just, we are committed to finding a solution for the Huntsville management situation. It's just deciding which way and, you know, how it is best to do it, and then let's go for it. I agree with Mike. Co-ops are, for our purposes, made to order. You know, where we have so many investors, individual investors, you know, our average client owns around 18 units. So, I mean, that's dividing everybody by everything, and it comes out, you know, averages. So it doesn't take too many to come up with a critical mass of units. Now it's just a matter of making things work. And I've looked into co-op formation and co-op laws. It's the business entity that makes the most sense for what we want to do. Co-ops legally must be non-profit organizations, which means that every co-op member then gets a dividend at the end of the fiscal year. You know, they're co-op's allowed to keep some reserves, but then they must disperse anything that would be profits. So that's, I think, a tailor-made business entity for our purposes. And I have some other thoughts on co-ops. You know, the biggest stumbling block I have seen when I first, you know, great minds think alike, I guess, Mike, because I saw your post in the forum about the same time I was thinking that a co-op would be the form. I got a little resistance here at Real Source headquarters because, well, the name co-op has some negative connotations to politically conservative people. You know, it kind of brings up Woodstock, I guess, and hippies or something. But co-ops have been around. The co-op movement started.
What do you? Don't knock the hippies.
Hey, we'll swap those stories another time. But you know, the one stumbling block I could see is almost every state in the union requires property managers to be licensed if they're not managing their own properties. You know, as soon as you do it for a fee for somebody else, and we'd have that issue with the co-op. I believe, though, a property management co-op would work if everybody who was a member of the co-op net leased their property to the co-op, so that the co-op was then managing, you know, its own units contractually, at any rate, their own units. And I think that structure bears some thought, because if you net leased your property to the co-op for, say, your break even, so your mortgage was paid, and then of course expenses are tapped out. It's just like the farmers do their milk. You know, at the end of the month, they get a check for the number of gallons they the co-op processed for them. You know, so the rules and regs for co-ops are set up that you know, expenses can be tabulated to the individual properties, and profits would be distributed on a prorated basis there also, after taking out the expenses and a bit of an operating reserve. And I think that's a form that we really ought to examine, and it would work.
Obviously, this has been an ongoing issue in the Huntsville area. I mean, what do you think are the roadblocks or the barriers from, and we have enough individuals who seem to be interested in and potentially pooling their resources, but what do you think has been some of the key roadblocks from everyone potentially doing something of this nature? I mean, this is
I think the roadblock is that that Real Source Night needs to find a way to put you people together, the Huntsville people together.
I agree. We have, you know, it's pulling the trigger. You know, real sources here, but it's kind of like, you know, everybody wants to go to heaven and nobody wants to die. So, you know, this isn't the first time we've had this discussion. We met with Kathy Banta last winter the same way, and then when it comes down to, you know, are we going forward or not, you know, we end up with not a quorum. So I would say it would take, we would need an organizational meeting and probably a face-to-face kind of atmosphere.
I think that's very, very important. And it would probably benefit everyone if RealSource could maybe arrange a meeting in Huntsville with the Huntsville owners to put these people together, see, number one, if they can work together. And those that can discuss this in a deeper basis to really get down to the nitty gritty. Because Huntsville is, from what I've been reading on the forum, is a huge problem. Property management is a huge problem in Huntsville.
It is.
Property management is a huge problem in every RealSource market, from what I've read, based on the roots going back years. I mean,
yes,
there
it is.
People complaining. Oklahoma, there are issues. So if this is something, if this is an experiment that works out, this is an experiment that ends up not benefiting only the owners, but it benefits a problem that's been an issue for RealSource as well.
Yes.
Amen.
Oh.
And, you know, for those who don't know me, that's exactly why I'm here. We had a different business model for selecting property managers. I worked with Mike Anderson in the early days of RealSource back in 1992 through about 1997, and worked with Mike a number of aspects of the RealSource business model were my contributions to this company. Mike asked me to specifically spearhead the property management issue. And I believe in the last couple of years, we've done a lot better with, we have a better business model, we have a better model for selecting managers and being active that way. But to remediate the existing problems, you know, from old markets, Oklahoma City, you know, that's pretty much everybody's sold there. Huntsville is just...
They got out too soon, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yes, they did. I mean, Oklahoma City is doing exactly what our economists said it would do.
June 2007, in Oklahoma City, apartments had appreciated 23%.
And the beauty of multifamilies is that isn't Greater Fool, that isn't Bubble, that's just hard numbers and cap rates. That's rents and cap rates. You know, so it's real money. It's
my suggestion would be for the Huntsville people is to maybe RealSource put together some kind of a conference there, a free conference for the people who own property in Huntsville.
Sure.
Get together to meet each other and to discuss these issues, because there's a lot going on there and people are getting hurt.
I think some people have left Huntsville because of the issue. Well, they sort of out of Huntsville anyway. They've been bled dry. So.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's very important.
Mike, the discussion about the needing a real estate broker for the handling the escrow monies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To hire, or I needed to get around that in North Carolina, and so I hired the broker who sold me the properties. He's the technically he's part of my management company.
That's a creative solution.
And also, technically, He doesn't do anything except download the books once a month, the escrow books, but he doesn't do anything else. But he's part of the management company, and he did it because he sold me the properties and made a lot of money.
Yeah, I can see. You know, I come from, of course, the broker side of things, and I think for that kind of liability, you know, I'm not going to ask a broker to work for free. But, of course, you know, as a client of the broker where, you know, they've cashed your commission check, I think you have a good bit of leverage there. So
I pay him $300 per month per property, which is a very nominal.
Yeah. Okay.
I was also a real estate broker for 20-some-odd years, so I know how the books have to look and what has to be in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's how we got around that situation of requiring or needing to have a real estate broker as part of the management company. He is a nominal part. I think he has 10%. I think he had to have 10%.
For compliance with the, and that's it, the state laws, you know, because real estate is governed by the state, there's so much variation from state to state. Of course, we have the legal department to deal with that, so, you know, the real source will stand behind whatever decision the owner's group wants to make and give you all the support we can, of course. So, and we have the resources. Also, you know, great resources in just our clients, as you can tell, Mike, Linda, the rest of you. It tickled me, Mike, when you said you would be happy to serve in an advisory capacity to any kind of group that wanted to get going on this. And I was hoping to hear something like that.
I'd be willing to do everything I can to help also.
Thank you, Linda. Like I said, I can't, you know, in good conscience ask, because these are pro bono positions, but thank you. We'll accept.
Does anybody else have any questions?
It's very disheartening to buy a piece of property and see your investment dollars and you're feeling helpless because they're just going away.
I agree. And it's every bit as disheartening to be on this end of it. Just, you know, we got to do something, and, you know, being almost just that powerlessness of, you know, we want your investments to succeed also. You know, I mean, that goes without saying, I think.
It benefits everyone. It benefits investors, and it benefits RealSource, because people are successful in their properties. They will then go and buy more property.
Yeah, we
everybody benefits.
Yes, that's...
But this is a serious problem that needs to be addressed, and quickly addressed. So I think if RealSource could maybe arrange with owners in certain areas, like Huntsville seems to be a huge, huge problem. Syracuse isn't any better from what I understand. Arrange for those owners of properties in those areas to have a conference so they can go see their property, see what's going on, and sit down and spend a few days and hammer out some solutions to these problems and some money. And do it cost, you know, do everything that needs to be done cost effectively.
I will make that
100%. You need to actually go there and do it, and it'd be great
you
if the source would
there.
Organize it. Linda's right, absolutely correct.
Well, then, that's what we will do. And you know, we've got holidays. Time is so critical here. You know, we're coming down to the end of the year. So I know everybody's schedule is going to get hectic. We'd want to make this meeting when you know, the greatest number could attend, and we'd want to do it soon. I would think within the next 30 days.
Do we have Huntsville people on the line that would be available for such? You know, let's get some thoughts about that.
Would you be available, Don?
This is Ron Gordon.
Hi, Ron.
38 units in Huntsville, and I'll be in Huntsville, in fact, on the 7th of November. And it's something that we've talked about in the past, and we had a meeting with some owners out here in California, and kind of fell apart. But I think it's a great idea. So I'm all for it.
Well, I think everybody who owns property in Huntsville, you know, it's a real source should take a poll, see when the most people can be there, and set up some kind of a conference just to deal with the Huntsville property.
I will get that email out first thing in the morning.
And there are some owners out there who own pretty substantial property, so I'm hoping they can swing the pendulum greatly if they're on board, but it doesn't seem that's been the case in the past, so I'm hopeful that the operation can eventually swing them in another direction.
This is Ed Lechner. One thing I think you might want to think about is trying to define the details of the financial structure of the co-op a little bit more carefully before we have people actually show up, because I can see all sorts of conflicts of interest if somebody walks into the office, you know, and they say, I'm looking for a two-bedroom apartment. Who's going to show them, or does it not make any difference? You're really sharing all the profits of all the things where you're pulling all the properties into one common pool, and then somebody wants to spend more maintenance on anger than somebody else. So I think that you really have to have some understanding as far as what's going to be workable financially before you get people in place.
Agreed. Well, let's brainstorm this via email. I've got a comprehensive Huntsville owner list, and, you know, we'll work out as many details as we can, and then let's set a date and commit to a Huntsville meeting. We can look at the properties, and you know, it'd be good to visit your properties if you haven't seen them lately. And
that's important. You know, the people who own properties outside of the areas where they live need to realize that this is a business.
Yes.
And they can't just turn this over and pray for the best. They have to physically visit their properties on a regularly scheduled basis. They need to make surprise visits on their people. They need to really have a handle on what's going on in their area. If you're there and you're looking at it and you're seeing it and you're seeing what needs to be done, you have a much better grasp of what you need to do to make some profit. How is Syracuse doing, by the way? Does Syracuse still have the same management problems that Huntsville has?
The Syracuse management problem, when Mary moved back there to manage her properties, and she's a professional manager in California, and she and her husband moved back. She took on, she filled a big void in the management problems in Syracuse. But unfortunately, I think we have a lot of Syracuse owners that have sold out, like Huntsville owners. And Syracuse is, again, performing exactly the way, as you know, the economists predicted it would. They've got them all issues settled, even though it's not completed yet. And rents are increasing, and vacancy is just really razor thin now, you know. So all of that has come to pass. But again,
that's what needs to be done in Huntsville.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a formulation for a good plan here.
I think so, too. And I can't thank
you enough, Linda, or you, Michael? Hey, thank you.
My pleasure, and I want to just let everyone who's listening know, if you have any questions, feel free to contact me on the Real Source Forum, and I'll get to your questions as quickly as I can.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Does anybody else have any last questions?
Is that Mike?
Yes.
I'll email you, Mike. This is Gary.
Okay. I'd be happy to talk to you.
Okay, but if it's a good question, let's post it on the forum so everybody can share it. And I will we'll do some editing on this tape to take out all of my ums and ahs and things and, you know, make it a little more compact. And I'll announce it on the forum when it's ready to go. It should be within the week. And anyone who wants a copy of this can email me and I'll get it out to them.
Okay, and just please let everybody know that any question they post on the forum, I'm willing to answer. I'm sure Mike Carroll is willing to answer. We'll do we'll both do our best to help everybody out there in the best way we know how.
Well, God bless you, Linda. God bless you, Mike. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.